I needed to shake out the fidgets and think, and I thought best while moving. I doubted the demon could ride a slick board, so we walked. The demon trailed me. My fingers locked so tightly around my scabbard they ached. Bits of foil wrappers and discarded paper cups, cigarette butts, the detritus of city life. I kicked at a soda flow can. Little speckles from quartz in the pavement, broken glass, a rotting cardboard Sirion box, a pigeon hopping in the gutter taking flight. Two blocks fell away under my feet. Three.
That went well.
You think so? Gabe and I go way back.
Gabe. And you're Danny. Dante.
I had a classical humanist for a social worker. I tested positive for psionic ability and got tossed into the hegemony psi program. I was lucky.
Lucky?
My parents could have sold me as an indentured, probably in a colony instead of having me in a hospital and automatically giving me to the foster program. Though a colony would have been preferable to Rigor Hall.
For a moment, the memory. Locked up in a cage, sharp bites of nothingness and madness against my skin. Or the whip burning as it laid a stroke of fire along my back, rose to choke me. The hall had been hell. A true hell, a human hell, without the excuse of demons to make it terrifying.
Or sold me to a wage farm, worked until my brain and talent gave out. Or sold me as a breeder, squeezing out one psi-positive baby after another for the colony program. You never know.
Oh.
I looked up, caught a flash of his eyes. Had he been looking at me? His profile was bony, almost ugly. A fall of light from a street lamp throwing dark shadows under his eyes and cheekbones. His aura was strangely subdued. The diamond darkness folding around him. Like wings. I was lucky. I didn't know who my parents were, but their last gift to me had been having me in a hospital and signing the papers to turn me over to the hegemony. Even though the Parapsychic Act was law, and Psys were technically free citizens, bad things still happened. Psys were still sold into virtual slavery, especially if their talent was weak or their genes recessive. And most especially if they were born in backroom clinics or in the darkness of red-light districts and slums. Jeff had a habit of clasping his hands behind his back while walking.
So what do you do? In hell, I mean. What's your job?
If I thought his profile was ugly before, it became stone-like and savage now. His mouth pulling down and his eyes actually turning darker, murderously glittering. My heart jumped into my throat. I tasted copper.
I am the assassin. I am the prince's right hand.
You do the devil's dirty work.
Can you find some other title to give him? You are exceedingly rude, even for a human. Demons do not conform to your human idea of evil.
You're an exceeding asshole, even for a demon. And the human idea of evil is all I've got. So what is such an august personage doing hanging out with me?
If I keep you alive long enough to recover the egg, I will be free.
You mean, you're not free now?
Of course not.
He tilted his head up, as if listening. My left shoulder twinged.
Where are we going?
I'm gonna see Dakin. He's a magi. He'll just love you.
My jaw ached and my eyes were hot and grainy.
After that, I'm gonna get some sleep. Then I'll visit the spider. And by then, Gabe should have everything together and I'll start hunting.
I suppose you will try to escape me as soon as possible.
Not tonight. I'm too tired tonight.
But afterward, I don't want to lose my chance at freedom for your petty human pride.
You say human like it's a dirty word.
I tucked my free hand in my pocket. My rings were dark now, no longer glittering and sparking. Out here, in the flux and ambient static of city power, the atmosphere wasn't charged enough to make them react. Instead, they settled into a watchful gleam.
That's the same way you say demon.
Was he scowling? I had never seen a demon scowl, and I stared, fascinated.
I'm not gonna win this one.
I dropped my eyes hurriedly back down to the pavement.
You stuck a gun in my face.
It was lame, even by my standards.
That's true. I did. I thought you were a door guard. Who knows what the best necromancer of a generation has guarding the door? I was only told to collect you and keep you alive. Nothing else. Not even that you were a woman.
I stopped short on the sidewalk and examined him. He stopped too and turned slightly, facing me. I pulled my hand from my pocket, stuck it out.
Let's start over. Hi, I'm Danny Valentine.
He paused for so long that I almost snatched my hand back. But he finally reached out and his fingers closed around mine.
I am Jeff Rimmel.
I shook his hand twice, had to pull a little to take my hand back.
Nice to meet you.
I didn't mean it. I would rather have never seen his face. But sometimes the little courtesies helped.
Likewise. I am very pleased to meet you, Danny.
Maybe he was lying too, but I appreciated the effort.
Thanks.
I started off again, and he fell into step beside me.
So, you're Lucifer's right hand, huh?
He nodded, his profile back to its usual harsh, almost ugly lines.
Since I was hatched.
Hatched? Never mind. Don't tell me. I don't want to know.
You're very wise. Some humans pester us incessantly.
I thought you liked that. Demons, I mean, as a whole.
Some of us have leave from the Prince to answer the calls of the Magi. I have not had much traffic with humans.
Neither have I.
That seemed to finish up the conversation for a while. I was glad. I had a whole new set of things to worry about. How Dakin would react, and how the news of me hanging out with one of Hell's citizens would get around the city really fast, especially if I saw Abra. I couldn't leave the demon behind. He might get into trouble, and besides, I don't think he'd take to waiting in an alley while I went into Dake's club.
Absolutely not.
I was right. He didn't take to it. His eyes turned almost incandescent.
Okay, fine. Keep your hat on.
I looked across the rain-slick street. A few sleek, cigar-shaped personal hovers drifted in a parking pattern overhead, and there were several slick boards leaning against the side of the old warehouse, reactive paint glowing on their undersides. I scanned them out of habit and noticed one had a hot mag tag. Evidently, some kid had jacked it.
Kids stealing slick boards? What next? Then again, since hovers have palm locks and body scans built in standard now, a slick is all a kid can steal.
Pole Street rang with neon and nightlife around us.
If you want to go in with me, you're going to have to do what I tell you, okay? Let me do the talking and don't start a fight unless I start one first, okay? And try not to kill anyone. Just hurt them bad enough to keep them down.
He nodded, his dark hair stuck to his head with dampness. A fine drizzle had started around Trivisadero and 18th Street and followed all the way out into the tank. A block down from us, a group of freelance hookers huddled under an overhang, the neon running wetly off their pleather sheets and go-go boots. A cop cruiser slid by like a silent shark, bristling with antennas and humming with riot shields. It drifted to a stop by the hookers, and I wondered if they were scanning for licenses or looking for a little fun. I licked my dry lips, nervous.
Actually, can you look scary? It would help.
He bared his teeth and I had to fight down the urge to step back.
Okay, you win. You just look scary and I'll do the talking.
We crossed the street, the demon keeping step slightly behind me and stepped up on the pavement on the other side. There were two bouncers there, shaved gorillas with black market augments, three times my size. My fingers itched.
Please don't let there be any trouble.
I came to a stop right in front of the bouncers. The one on the left paled visibly, seeing my tat. The one on the right looked the demon over, his fat cheeks quivering with either terror or silent laughter. I inhaled deeply, tasting night air, hash smoke, and the salt sweat sweet smell of chill.
Does Dake know one of his bouncers is on Clomin 13? That shit's nasty. It makes addicts psychotic after a while.
Taking down a chill freak was hard work. I tilted my head so my tat was visible to both of them.
Deacon Whitaker?
The bouncer on the right nodded. I saw the telltale glint of a comlink glittering from his right ear, and his throat swelled. He had a subvocal implant, too. Great. Dake knew I was coming.
He's indisposed.
Shaved gorilla number one had mutton chops and some very nice custom-made leather pants straining at his massive legs.
Either he sees me now or I tear his club apart and bring the cops down here. He can be charged for interfering with a legitimate hunt. I'm doing a bounty and I'm in a bad mood. It's up to him.
The demon's hot silence swelled behind me. 5 seconds. 10. 15.
Come on in. Go up to the office, the big man says.
I nodded and passed between them, the demon moving close. Together we plunged into a swirling migraine attack of red and orange light, skitters of brightness from the blast ball hanging from the ceiling, hash smoke and the reek of alcohol mixing with the smell of sweat and the psychic assault of a warehouse full of people, sunk in the music, most of them dancing. A thin edge of red desperation curled over a smile, a razor flick against a numb arm. I was used to the sensory assault, barely paused, my mental shields thickening. There were ghost flits in the corners, riding the air, a few of them silently screaming. People think that when they die, the light opens up and takes them. A majority of the time, that's what happens. But sometimes, often enough, the soul is chained here. Sometimes confused or held by violent death, and sometimes just unable to leave without a loved one. The souls of the dead crowd toward the living any place there's power enough to feed them and make them more than just a cold sigh against the nape. More than just a memory. Back before the Parapsychic Act, there was about 50 years of psionics being bought and sold by corporations like chattel, even necromances. And before that, necromances were generally locked in asylums or driven to suicide by what we saw, what nobody else could see. Some, like Gabe's ancestors, made it through by keeping mum about their talents, blending in. Others just assumed they were crazy. I forced my way through the crowd, each person a padded sledgehammer blow, laid completely open by hash and trance music. I recognized the track. It was Retro Funk's Celadon Groove, and felt a sharp, twisting pain. I hadn't danced for 3 years. Not since Jace. My head came up. I scanned the crowd. Like most sighs, I disliked crowds, especially riot crowds or large groups all stoned on hash. Sure, I could jack in and ride the power created by that much wide-open emotional energy, but I had no need of it. Other sighs knew enough to keep their thoughts to themselves, but most normals were sloppy broadcasters, hammering at even the best of shields with the chaotic wash of sense impressions and thoughts. It was like walking through a field of unmuffled hovers. Even if you had earplugs, the noise still settled against the pulse and bones and hurt. No. Maybe it wasn't the dancing or the crowd that hurt. Maybe it was only my heart. I hadn't thought of Jason at least 6 months. Writhing bodies pulsed on the lit-up dance floor. I saw couples twisted around each other, a few shadowed booths in back full of bodies that could have been swooning in love or death. A sharp strain of desperate sex rode the air. My nostrils flared and my rings sparked. I could have jacked into the atmosphere and used that power for a greater work if I'd needed to. I slid between two tarted-up, rail-thin yuppie girls so doped out on hash it was a wonder they were still vertical. I nodded to the bartender. Behind the bar was a moth-eaten red velvet curtain that the bartender, a skinny, nervous man in a red jumpsuit, a cigarette hanging from his lips, pushed aside. A safety door was slightly open, a slice of yellow light leaking out and into the smoky air. My skin prickled with heat and uneasy energy.
God damn it, that bastard at the door warned Dake, and now he's getting ready. I'm wanted him off balance.
I jumped forward, darted through the door, and ran lightly up the stairs. I wasn't in my best shape. My stomach was still bruised and tender from puking, and my entire body felt just a fraction of a second too slow. But when I spun into Dake's plasglass-walled office, my sword already drawn, he did look surprised. He was up to his pudgy elbows with venomous green snapping power, and was just turning away from the open iron casket on his desk. Dakin was a magi, albeit a weak one. He'd been a few years behind me at Rigor Hall, and I still thought of him as the same pudgy-faced kid with his uniform all sloppy and his mouth loose and wet from too much synth hash. He'd barely managed to produce a low-level imp to qualify for magi accreditation, and his tat was a plain round Celtic symbol with no taste. All in all, he wasn't the best for this type of work, but he was the only magi I could conceivably bully into doing me a tracker for a demon without having to pay an arm and a leg for it. Even though Dake was a lousy magi when it came to calling up demons, he was pretty good at the offensive magics. He couldn't fight much physically, but with enough of a power charge, he was fast and nasty. That, I suspected, was why he rarely, if ever, left his nightclub. I hadn't heard of him being on the street in years. He was as close to a shut-in as it was possible for a scion to get. And that was also why he was the perfect choice to do a tracker for me. It was a passive-offensive piece of magic, which meant it was right up his alley, and he didn't have to leave his nightclub to do it.
You son of a bitch! You were planning on giving me a little surprise, weren't you, Dakin? Just like the little bitch you are.
My blade spat blue-green, light running along its razor edge. The runes I'd spelled into the steel sparked into life, twisting fluidly along the length of the blade. And the demon's aura laid over mine sparked and swirled. Dakin's round, pale face suddenly went slick with sweat. I felt more than heard the arrival of the demon behind me. Dakin nearly passed out, swaying, his expensive Dracarmani shirt sweat and clinging under his armpits. A green glow arced between his fingers. Sloppy of him.
Yes, Dake, me. Of course. Who else would come and talk to you? Nobody likes you and you have no friends. Why are you so fucking surprised?
Dake's eyes flicked past me. He wore a pair of shiny pleather pants, straining to hold his ample legs in.
You have
a demon familiar. Jealous, Magi? I'll have him talk to you up close if you like.
The demon moved past me, almost as if reading my mind. The diamond flares of his aura spread, filling the room, closing around the unlucky Magi. I held my sword slanting across my body, the blessed steel a defense from the demon who bore down on Dakin with slow, even steps. Dake scrambled back and almost leapt on top of his desk.
What the fuck do you want? Christ, Danny, what do you want? Just tell me!
The demon paused, again, as if reading my mind.
Information.
I scanned the room.
Something is off here. One instrument is out of tune, screwing up the whole damn band. Salt, sweat, sweet. The odor of chill.
I fumbled the paper out of my bag. Silver flashed from my rings. I approached Dake carefully, brushing past the demon who stood taut and ready. I unfolded the paper, glanced down at the twisted rune that was Vardamol's name. The African masks Dake hung on the walls ran with wet red light through the plasglass windows. People downstairs were dancing, strung out on hash and sex, unaware of the drama going on right overhead.
I want you to give me a tracker key to this name, Dake. And if you're a very good boy, I will call the patrols in to get rid of your chill stash.
Lousy, stupid motherfucker. Chill's gonna eat you alive. And how many lives are you gonna destroy dealing here? I wonder one of your bouncers is on that shit. God damn you, Dake!
His round brown eyes rolled. I held up the paper, ready to jump back if the green glow around his hands struck for me.
I'm not... Danny,
Don't fucking lie to me!
My sword whipped up, stopping just in time. Razor steel caressed his wet double chin.
Now, are you gonna do me a tracker, Dick, or do I get all Catholic and burn this goddamn place down?
The demon's arm shot past me, fingers sinking into Dake's throat under its slab of fat, pushing my sword aside. I resheathed my blade.
Put it down.
I didn't glance down at whatever had just fallen to the floor. The green glow lining the Magi's hands drained away. Dake's face crumpled.
Oh, sick of it, Sa'es. If he starts to cry, I'll be here all night calming him down.
Let go of him. He won't be good for anything if you make him cry.
As you like.
I was perilously close to losing my temper. Instead, I curled my fingers into Dake's shoulder as the demon retreated.
Oh, come on, Dake. We were just playing around, right? You don't mean to hurt me. You like me. You want to be my friend, don't you, Dake?
Dake nodded, his lank brown hair flopping forward over his sweaty forehead. Just like school. I'd interfered once when some of the bigger Magi kids had been pushing Dake around, and had to suffer his pathetic attachment for the rest of my career at Rigor Hall. The trouble with Dake was that he had no grit in him. If he hadn't already been broken, Mirovich and Rigor Hall would have wrecked him. For a Magi to lack a magical will was bad news. The power wouldn't obey, and his or her spells would go awry. I was of the private opinion that it was a good thing Dake hadn't been able to call up more than an imp inside a chalk circle with a whole collection of more experienced Magi standing guard in case things went wrong. An unwary, cowardly Magi would be easy prey for anything larger than an imp. And I wondered what would have happened if something like Jaff had shown up in response to Dake's summonings. A greater flight demon could kill even from within a chalk circle. That's why they were so hard to call up. Lucky me, getting to hang out with one.
Good, good. You'll be my good boy, Dake, and give me a tracker. Then I'll be out of your hair and you can go back to selling chill and waiting for it to burn out your fucking brain and your talent as well.
I'm not on chill.
Shit, does he even have enough talent left to do a decent tracker?
I stepped back and Dake slid down from the desk, his boots hitting the floor. I half turned, looked at the demon. Jeff Rommel's eyes were incandescent green.
Make sure he doesn't move.
Below conscious level, the spinning vortex of darkness that was the demon focused on a red-brown pulsing smear. Dake. My own aura under the demon's shielding held the trademark glitters of a necromance. I watched those glitters swirl, reacting to the presence of the demon and the nervous spatters of red-brown Dake was giving off. On this level, Dake and Whittaker was visibly in trouble, gaping holes in his aura, power jittering and trembling out of his control. Dake's power would escape him. Eat him alive as the chill consumed his nervous system. But not yet. Not yet. He had his power, but not for very much longer. I snapped back into myself. The demon was absolutely still and silent, his shoulder touching mine, his eyes eating into a trembling Dake. I held the paper up.
I need a tracker, Dake. Get your kit and be quick. I've got other shit to do tonight.
When it was finished, the tracker looked like a globe of spun crystal and silver wire, a crystal arrow inside it, pulsing faintly reddish as it spun.
What's the range on this thing?
I almost forgot that Dake was a chill freak now. When he was motivated, he did good work, and it was always nice to see another magical discipline perform.
Oh, it's worldwide, baby. It's a great work. Let it settle for about 24 hours, and then give it the keyword, and it'll go live. Use sparingly.
Dake coughed into his palm, scuttling back toward his desk. The odor of burning blood in the air had bothered me for the first 10 minutes, but my nose was acclimated now. I'd never seen anyone grind up a frog before. I dropped the tracker in a small leather pouch and settled it carefully around my neck.
Okay, Dig. Thanks.
I did not tell him I owed him one. He blinked at me.
You're not gonna kill me?
No, of course not, you idiot. Why would I kill you?
I know how you feel about Chill. And if you think that I'm a...
I don't think, Dig. I know. And you'll get yours soon enough. The Chill's gonna eat you, Dakin. There's no detox for it. You're a stupid motherfucker.
I turned on my heel.
It's not my fault!
I swung out the door.
It's not!
Yeah. Sure it's not, Dakin. Nothing ever is. Hot salt spilled down my cheeks as I pushed through the crowd of people. And finally, blessedly achieved the coolness of the street outside. One of the bouncers, probably the Chill Freak, sniggered something inaudible, and for a single heartbeat I considered turning around and separating him from his liver. I wrestled the urge down, still striding along the cracked pavement, my shields resounding. I waited until I turned the corner to stop, head down, my ribs heaving. I had jammed my sword into the loop on my belt, not trusting myself with edged metal right now.
Are you injured?
I almost flinched. The hard, impenetrable darkness of his aura swirled once, counterclockwise, brushed against my aura's sparkling. Checking for damage, I shivered, my shields thickening reflexively, pushing the touch away. It was bad enough to smell like a demon. I didn't want him pawing at me, even on an energetic level.
I'm fine. I just wanted to... I'm fine.
He didn't say anything else. Instead, he only stood there. Another human being might have asked me useless questions, tried to say something comforting. Apparently a demon wouldn't. I finally wiped my cheeks and scanned the street. Deserted except for me and a demon.
Okay, we've got our tracker, let's go.
Is he a friend of yours?
The demon tipped his chin back, indicating the vague direction of the club with one elegant motion. His eyes were darker now, strange runic patterns slipping through the depths of green light. Not anymore. I cast around for a call box. There was one down at the end of the street, and I set out for the lighted plasteel box. The demon followed me, moving like a manta ray slipping through dark water. I passed my hand over the credit square, flushing my palm with power. The door clicked open, and I stepped into the call box. It was one of the older ones without a vidshell. Thank the gods for small favors.
Hold the door.
The demon put out his golden hand, held the folding door aside. I picked up the handset and dialed the cop shop.
Vice, Detective Lou Horman speaking.
Horman? It's Danny.
Ah, for Christ's sakes.
I didn't know he was a Christer.
Don't blaspheme, Detective. Look, I've got a word for you.
Look, what the fuck now, deadhead? I ain't homicide.
You know the Chill that's been soaking the South Side? Found out a major distributor.
What?
Of course, if you're not interested...
God damn it, you deadhead freak. Come on, give it up.
Dakin Whitaker, out of his club. One of his bouncers is a Chill Freak, and so is he now.
A fucking magician's a Chill Freak? I thought they didn't...
They don't last long, but they're nasty while they do. And take some para backup with you. Don't mention my name, okay?
Quiet as the grave.
I let it pass. You owe me one, Horman. I took my hand off the phone and looked out the wavering safety glass at the dark street. Pools of street lamp glow shivering on wet pavement.
Fuck!
I clenched my hand.
Fuck!
My fist starred the safety glass in a spreading spider web. I pulled back and let another one fly. This punch left a bloody print on the cracked glass. When I had swallowed the last of my rage, I opened my eyes to find the demon studying me. His eyes were even darker.
What did you do?
I just turned Dick into the cops.
Why?
Because he'll kill people with that Chill shit.
A drug?
Yeah, a nasty drug.
A drug that makes mothers abandon their infant babies at the hospital. A drug that eats people whole. A drug that makes punk kids shoot social workers on the street in broad daylight. A drug that swallows whole families and smashes scions. A drug the hegemony won't get serious about outlawing because the mob gets too much taxable income off it. A drug the cops can barely stem the tide against because half of them are on the take anyway, and the other half are so choked with paperwork they can't stop it.
Between Chill and the mob, it was hard to tell which I hated more.
Why not let those stupid enough to take it die?
I considered him, my bleeding hand curled tightly in my unwounded hand. Dake had been at Rigor Hall. I suppose I couldn't blame him for wanting some oblivion. My own nightmares were bad enough. Just the thought of that place made my shields quiver. The headmaster, so chilly, precise.
We've got something special for those who break the rules today, Miss Valentine.
The smell of chalk and spoiled magic. The feel of a collar's metal against my naked throat and collarbones. Thinking about it made the scars on my back ache again. An ache I knew was purely psychic. Three stripes running down my back. And the other scar, the burn scar, just at the bottom crease of my left buttock. Dake probably had his own scars. But that was no excuse to drown them in Chill. After all, I managed to live without drowning mine, didn't I? It was no excuse. Or had I just turned him in because I was having a pissy day?
Because I'm human, and I operate by human rules. Okay?
I wasn't about to tell him about Lewis bleeding to death on the sidewalk, dead by a Chill freak's hand, his antique watch and Robotnik sneakers stolen to hawk for more Chill. It was private. And anyway, what did he care why I hated Chill? It was enough that I hated it. He shrugged.
Your hand.
What?
Give me your hand.
After a moment's consideration, I extended my hand. He folded his fingers over it, still holding the door of the call box open with his other elbow. My entire hand fit inside his palm, and his fingers were hard and warm. A spine-tingling rush of power coated my entire body. His eyes glowed laser green. The pain crested, drained away. When he let go of my hand, it was whole and unwounded under a mask of blood. I snatched it back, examined it, and looked up at him.
I will endeavor to remember human rules.
You don't have to. You're a demon, you're not one of us.
He shrugged, stood aside so I could exit the call box. The light inside the call box flicked off.
Okay.
What next?
I looked at my hand.
Next, I go home and try to get some sleep. Tomorrow I'm visiting Abracadabra, a friend. I'll see if she can give me a direction to go in and some contacts. Better not to use the tracker until I'm sure I need it.
Very well.
He didn't move. Just stood there, watching me. A gigantic lethargy descended on me.
Why does it all have to be so hard?
The pressure behind my eyes and throat and nose told me I was a few minutes away from sobbing. I set my jaw and scanned the street again.
Empty, of course. Just when I need a cab.
Okay, come on.
He fell into step behind me, silent as death himself. I lay on my back, holding my sword to my chest, looking up at the dark ceiling. My eyes burned. I slept with my rings on, and the shifting blue-green glow sliding against the ceiling told me I was agitated.
As if I don't already know that.
My fingers clasped the sword more tightly. Downstairs, the demon sat in front of my fireplace. He was adding his own layers of protection to my shields. Even my home wasn't mine anymore. Of course, on the plus side, that meant a better shielding for my house. If I'd been born a Magi, I would have at least some idea of how to deal with a demon in my house. I probably would have even been excited. Magi worked with circles and trained for years to achieve regular contact with Hell after passing their academy test and calling up an imp. They paid the rent by working as consultants and doing shielding for corporations like shamans. They also ran most of the training colleges and did magical research. Finicky eyes for detail, most Magi. But when dealing with demons, you wanted to be a perfectionist when it came to your circles and protections. The greater demons were like Loa, only more powerful. They didn't exactly have a human idea of morals. And while the Loa might mislead, it was an axiom of Magi practice that demons outright lied sometimes for the fun of it. Again, because their idea of truth wasn't the same as ours. I burrowed my back deeper into my bed. I was retreading the same mental ground, going over and over what I knew of demons, hoping I would somehow think of something new that would make me feel better about this.
If I was a Christer, I'd be peeling the paint off the walls screaming.
Some normals were still Christers, despite the awakening and the backlash against the evangelicals of Gilead. The Catholic section, of course, would have tried reading from old books and blessing water to get rid of a demon. Sometimes it might have worked. Even normals were capable of belief, though they couldn't use it like a tool as a shaman or a necromance could. And the Christers had even believed that demons could get inside people, not understanding the mechanics of shielding and psychic space very well. None of this got me anywhere.
How the hell did this happen? How did I end up working for the fucking devil?
I didn't have a clue. There had been no warning from my cards or runes or any other divination. Just a knocking on my door in the middle of a rainy afternoon.
So did they sneak up on me? Or are my instincts getting rusty? Or both?
I stared at the green shift shadows on the ceiling, my mind ticking. Sleep a million clicks away.
Breathe, Danny. Start the circle like you were taught. In through the nose, out through the mouth. Breathe deep. Deeper. Deeper.
The ritual was comforting, born of too many sleepless nights. Outside my window, a gray, rain-washed dawn was coming up. I settled myself more comfortably between white sheets. I wondered if the cops visited Dake yet, or if Dake had dumped his stash in panic, guessing I'd turn him in, though we went way back together. Back to the hall.
Don't think about that.
We've got something special for those who break the rules today, Miss Valentine.
Three lines of fire on my back. The whip. The smell of my own flesh searing.
Do not think about that.
I shifted on the bed, the sheet moving. My fingers white-knuckled on the sword hilt. Don't think about that. I closed my eyes.
What you cannot escape, you must fight. What you cannot fight, you must endure. Now think of something useful if you're going to stay awake.
You weren't warned because they haven't been preparing this. This doesn't have the feel of a well-planned expedition.
It was a relief to have something else to think about. So even the devil was scrambling to keep up with current events, so to speak. Maybe he'd gone to use this egg or look at it and found out it was gone. Hell was a big place. He couldn't keep track of every artifact and demon.
Which means Santino probably has Lucifer by the balls. And how does this Jaffermel fit in? He's Lucifer's agent. Why wouldn't Lucifer come out on this job himself?
There was no good fretting over it. I was well and truly caught. I consigned the question to my unconscious mind. With any luck, the bubbling stew of my subconscious would strike me with the answer, right between the eyes, soon enough.
Even Jaffermel has no idea what's going on. Even Lucifer. They're playing blind, which is why they need me. They need me. I'm calling the shots here.
The thought was enough to press a smile to my face as I kept breathing, waiting for dawn. When I finally fell asleep, The sky was turning gray with morning. The house was full of the smell of demon. Amber musk and burning cinnamon creeping through the air like gas. I came downstairs after a long shower and fresh clothes to find his scent rippling and dyeing the psychic atmosphere with golden darkness. He handed me a cup of coffee. He looked just the same as he had last night, except a little of the blankness was gone from his face. Now he looked thoughtful, his green eyes a shade darker and not quite meeting mine. Late afternoon sunlight slanted in through the window. The rain must have fled because golden sunlight edged the wandering Jew hanging over the sink.
Morning. How are you?
I slipped past him to stalk to the toaster.
Well enough. Did you sleep well?
No. I hardly ever do. Thanks for the coffee.
I dropped two slices of wheat bread into the toaster and pressed the button for just short of charcoal.
Where is your sword?
I don't think I need it in a demon-protected house, do I?
When we go out to hunt, I'll be taking my sword.
I won't put it away again until I've brought Santino down. I haven't started yet. This is just saddling my horse.
My rings sparked again. This time, the shower of sparks was pure gold.
I smell like a demon now. That should make things fun.
Before we go, I need you to tell me exactly what having a demon familiar means. I was gonna ask Dake, but we didn't have time last night. So I'm forced to ask you.
I'll do my best not to disappoint you.
I swung around to look at him. I fished a butter knife out of the drying rack next to the sink.
You're starting to develop a sense of humor. Good for you.
We will get exactly nowhere if we cannot reach an agreement. I am responsible for your safety, and my physicality is now tied to you by the grace of the prince. If I allow you to be harmed, it will be most unpleasant for me.
My toast popped up as I was getting the peanut butter down.
Guess it's bad luck all over for you, huh?
I set the coffee cup down. It was, at least, decent coffee.
On the contrary, it is very good luck. It appears you need a familiar, and I need my freedom. You appear tolerable, at least, despite your foul mouth. And you are occasionally thoughtless, but not stupid.
I looked over my shoulder. He had his hands behind his back again, standing military straight, his long black coat buttoned up to his chin.
Thanks. Have you had breakfast?
Human food is pleasant, but I don't need it.
I hooked up the kitchen phone.
What?
That was my hello good morning voice.
And a good morning to you too, Danny.
It was Trina, the agent for the Parapsych Services Unlimited Message Agency. Most scions in Saint City used them. Since I did bounties as well as apparitions, Trina managed my schedule and acted as a buffer between me and the cranks and yahoos who sometimes decided to prank call scions. I didn't have the time or energy to keep track of when I was supposed to be where, so Trina would coordinate with my DAT pilot and DAT band as well as monitor my DAT band while I was on a bounty. Magic was a full-time job. Even necromancers needed secretaries nowadays, and it was cheaper to just freelance contract with an agency.
A quick word?
What, another job? How much?
$50,000, standard.
That would take care of another few mortgage payments.
What kind?
A probate thing. Shouldn't take more than a couple hours. Old coot named Douglas Shantern died and the will's contested. Total estate's $15 million. The estate itself is paying your fee.
Okay, I'll take it.
Where's the body? How fresh?
Lawyer's office on Dantol Street has his cremains. Died 2 weeks ago.
I hate that.
I know. But you're the only one on the continent who can deal with the burned ones. Since you're so talented, I'll schedule you for midnight then?
Sounds good. Give me the address.
She did. I knew the building. It was downtown in the legal financial district. The Holovid image of a necromance is all graveyards and chanting and blood. But most of our work is done in lawyers' offices and hospital rooms. It's very rare to find a necromancer in a graveyard or a cemetery. We don't really like them.
Okay, tell them I'm bringing an assistant.
I didn't know you had an apprentice.
I have never met Trina face to face, but I always imagine her as a stolid, motherly woman who lived on coffee and danishes.
I don't. Thanks, Trina. I'll hear from you again, I'm sure.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye. Well, that's nice. Another little job.
Time is of the essence, Necromance.
I've got bills to pay. Santino won't get anywhere quickly. He escaped 50 years ago. You guys didn't jump right on the bandwagon to bring him down, so why should I? Besides, we're going to visit Abra, too, and after I do this job, Gabe will have all the things I need and we can start hunting. Unless you're going to pay my power bill this month.
You are infuriating.
The smell of demon was beginning to make me dizzy.
Tone it down a little, Jaffermel.
I curled my fingers around the edge of the counter and glared at him, reminding him that I knew his name.
I don't have a whole hell of a lot to lose here. You make me angry and you lose your big chance to shine.
He stared at me with bright laser green eyes.
I think he's angry. His eyes just lit up like a Yule festival tree. Or is that just me?
I held his gaze, wondering if the power thundering through the air would burn me. My rings popped and snarled, my shields shifting, reacting to the charged air. He finally glanced down at the floor, effectively breaking the tension.
As you command, mistress.
Shit, can he sound any more sarcastic?
I'm not your mistress, Jaffermel. The sooner I can get rid of you and back to my life, the better. All I want you to do is stay out of my way, you dig? After you explain what a demon familiar does.
He nodded, his eyes on the floor.
I see. When would you like your explanation?
I wiped a sweating hand on my shirt, my combat shields humming as they folded back down.
Let me finish my coffee first.
He nodded, his hair shifting, wet dark spikes.
As you like.
And pour yourself a cup of coffee or something.
Might as well be polite, even if he wasn't. The lawyer's grip was firm and professional. He didn't flinch at the tat on my cheek or at the sight of Jaffermel. Of course, lawyers in the age of parapsych don't scare easily.
Ashton Hutton, nice of you to come out on such short notice, Ms. Valentine.
Thank you, Mr. Hutton.
You fucking shark.
He was slightly psionic. Not enough to qualify for a trade, but enough to give him an edge in the courtroom. And his blonde hair was combed back from a wide forehead. Blue eyes sparkled. He had a disarming, expensive grin. The wet rat fur smell of some secret fetish hung on him. I took my hand back, smelling something repulsive and dry.
Not my business.
I looked past him into the tasteful meeting room. The windows were dark, but the lights were full spectrum, and the table was an antique polished mahogany, big enough to carve up a whale on. The family was there. Bone-thin, sucked-dry older woman who was probably the wife, dressed in a peach linen suit, very tasteful, a single strand of pearls clasped to her dry neck. There were two boys, one of them round and wet-eyed, greasy-haired, no more than 13, a ghost of acne clinging to his skin. The other was a college-age kid, his hair cut into the bowl shape made popular by Jasper Dex in the Holovids, leaning back in his chair while he tapped at the table's mirror-polished shine with blunt fingertips. On the other side of the table was a woman, maybe 35, her dark hair in a kind of spray-glued helmet, ruby earrings clipped to her ears.
Mistress.
Then my eyes flicked past her to the two plainclothes cops, and a whole lot more about this situation started to make sense. I looked at the lawyer, the smile dropping from my face like a bad habit.
What's with the cops?
We don't know yet. Ms. Sharpley requested a police presence here, and it was not denied by the terms of the will, so...
He spread his smooth, well-buffed hands. I nodded. In other words, the cops were here because someone was suspected of something, or relations between the wife and mistress were less than cordial. Also, none of my business. I stepped into the room, digging in my bag.
Well, let's get to work then.
Who's your associate? I didn't catch his name.
I didn't throw it. I'm here to raise a dead man, not talk about my accessories.
I was already wishing I hadn't accepted this job. In the center of the table stood the regulation box, heavy and made out of steel, holding the remains of the man I would be bringing back out of death's sleep.
I hate cremains.
I worked much better with a body, but you couldn't afford to be picky when you had a mortgage.
I wonder why an estate worth $15 million doesn't have an urn for the hubby.
Also none of my business. It wasn't my job to get involved. It was my job to raise the dead. The first time I'd raised an apparition out of ash and bone had been at the academy. I hadn't been prepared for the silence that fell over the training room when I'd done it. Most necromancers need a whole body. The fresher, the better. It was rare to have the kind of talent and power needed to raise a full apparition out of bits. It meant steady work, since I was the only necromancer around who could do it. But it also meant that I pulled more than my share of very gruesome remains. One of the worst had been the Choyne Towers fiasco, when a Puchkin transport had failed and crashed into the Three Towers. I'd been busy for days sifting through little bits and raising them for identification, and there were still 10 people missing. If I couldn't raise them, they must have been vaporized. And that was a singularly unpleasant thought. That hadn't made my reputation, though. My reputation as a necromancer had been cemented when I'd almost by accident raised the apparition of St. Crowley the Magi. It was supposed to be a publicity ploy by the Channel 2004 Holovid team, but I'd actually done it, much to everyone's surprise, including my own. But most of what I was stuck with were the gruesome ones, the burned ones and dead scions. It was hegemony law that the remains of a dead Psy had to be cremated, especially magi and ceremonials, because of the risk of feeders. I had the candles out and placed on the table when the wife reacted.
Do we have to? Is this absolutely necessary?
Chill out, Ma.
It was the college-age boy. He leaned back in his chair, balancing on two legs.
Smoke and mirrors, that's all, so they can charge for it, you know?
Ms. Valentine is a licensed, accredited necromancer, and the best in the country, if not the world, Mrs. Shantern. You did ask to have the questions resolved.
The stick woman's mouth compressed itself. On the other side of the table, the mistress's dark eyes rested steadily on the steel box. She was as cool and impenetrable as a locked hard drive, her smoothly planed cheeks coloring slightly as she raised her eyes to mine.
That's one tough cookie.
I looked over at the plainclothes. They didn't look familiar. Once the candles were secure in their holders, I snapped my fingers, my rings sparked, and blue flames sputtered up from the wicks, glowing like gas jets. The wife gasped, and the college boy's chair legs thudded down on the expensively carpeted floor. I always got a kick out of doing that.
If you'd be so kind as to kill the lights, Mr. Hutton.
I drew my sword free of its sheath.
We'll have this done in a jiffy.
The lawyer, maybe used to necromancers working in semi-dark, moved over to the door, brushing nervously past the demon who stayed close, almost at my shoulder. I hopped up on the table and sat cross-legged, the sword in one hand, and rested my free hand on the steel box. This put my head above everyone's, except the demon and the taller of the plainclothes cops in his rumpled suit.
What are they here for?
I dismissed the question.
Dante?
It was the first time Jaff had truly used my name.
It's okay. Just wait. I'll let you know if I need you.
I am your familiar, the demon had told me.
And I may act to defend you. Any harm that comes to you, I will feel as if committed to my own flesh. I am at your command, as long as you bear that mark. If it is possible for me to do, your word will make it so. I am not free to act as you are.
I understood a lot more now. No wonder Magi wanted familiars. It was like owning a slave, a magical slave and bodyguard. The trouble was, I didn't want a slave. I wanted to be left alone. I closed my eyes. Deep, circular breaths. My sword balanced across my knees. After the uncertainties of the last few days, it was a relief to have something I knew how to do and understood doing. Here, at least, was a problem I could solve. Dropped below conscious thought, the blue glow rising, my hand resting on the steel box.
Agara teterae idoi nolos, sempris quieris tecos mel.
If you were to write down a necromancer's chant, you'd have a bunch of nonsense syllables with no real power. Necromance chants aren't part of the canons or even a magical language. They're just keys, personal keys like the psychopomp each necromance has. Still, someone always tries to write them down and make them follow grammatical rules. The trouble is, the chants change over time. Blue crystal light rose above me, enfolded me. My rings spat sparks, a shower of them, my left shoulder twinging. Riding the power, I reached into the place where the cremains rested, hunting. Small pieces of shattered bone and ash, a bitter taste against my tongue. To taste death. To take death into you. It is a bitter thing, more bitter than any living taste. It burned through me, overlapping the ache in my shoulder from the demon's mark. I've seen the tapes. My head tips back and the power swirls counterclockwise, an oval of pale light growing over the body, or whatever is left of the body. My hair streams back, whether caught in a ponytail, braided, or left loose. The emerald on my cheek glitters and pulses, echoing the pulsing of the oval of light hanging in front of me, the rip in the world where I bring the dead through to talk. My hand fused to the steel box, my other hand clamped around the hilt of my sword. The steel burned fiercely against my knees, runes running like water up the blade. My tattoo shifted madly, serpents writhing up the staff of the caduceus, their scales whispering dryly. Blue crystal light. The god considered me, felt through me for the remains, and the thin thread that I was stretched quivering between the world of the living and the dead. I became the razor blade bridge that a soul is pulled across to answer a question, the bell a god's hand touches to make the sound out of silence. I kept my eyes closed. It was hard to keep the apparition together.
Ask